Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week we'll be taking a look at three top stories in this week's news that we've seen in international education, and I invite you to join the conversation here on Facebook. For those that are watching on repeat on the Facebook page or on our YouTube channel, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your day to listen to what we have to say regarding the issues facing our profession today. And goodness knows that they are significant and quite real. And the landscape seems to be changing day to day. So it's really important that we stay on top of all the latest developments. And really appreciate those that are taking the time to be with me as part of this exercise today. It's an important time in our industry. There's been nothing like it over the last 20 years, perhaps since post 9/11 and the immediate aftermath that college campuses were dealing with related to international students. What we're talking about is obviously COVID-19 and the impact that is having on our profession. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to share with you the latest from DHS on COVID-19 and some of the adjustments that they've been making to immigration regulations that impact international students. We'll also talk about the broader challenge that's impacting institutions globally when it comes to canceled exams and how to respond as an institution with regard to your admissions policies. And then we'll wrap up with a focus again on what all of us are involved in international ed, and that's the care for our students, whether they be study abroad students that we're trying to get home or deal with credit issues if they were going to be graduating and all of those fun things, or the issues of current international students that are in the United States that might want to get home but maybe can't. They can't stay on campus, perhaps, so what are the options for them? But also we're looking at what we're doing for future students. So we'll take a look at all of these today over the next 25 minutes or so. So I want to, again, thank you for joining me live or on repeat, and also for those that are downloading the podcast. You're an important part of the SMIE Consulting family, and really happy to have you a part of this experience. As everybody comes to grips with working from home, as I mentioned last week, welcome to my world. This is what I've been doing for the better part of 6 years, working after leaving Education USA, working from home and having the benefits of my home office and everything that entails. So I'm a little bit ahead of the curve when it comes to dealing with these kind of things. But what I will say is having time during your day at the office might be a little bit harder to jump on a live broadcast, and I appreciate those of you who are already jumping on today and making this a part of your week at work from home. So let's start. We know international ed has been rocked by COVID-19. There's no doubt about it. No country is really immune to it at this point if you're a serious destination for international students. And each week, for those who aren't familiar, I produce through SMIE Consulting a weekly newsletter that goes out Mondays at 9 a.m. Eastern, and I posted the link to the most recent edition in the comments section on the Facebook page. So if you don't have this live, you can go to smieconsulting.org and go to the subscribe page, and you'll be able to see all the past newsletters that we've compiled over the last year and a half and from that newsletter each week, we take three of the international ed stories and then profile them here on the Midweek Roundup on Wednesdays and go a little bit more in depth to the content of what these stories have for our industry and the impacts that they have. So we spend about a half an hour each week talking through them, and let's jump right in with the first one. With regards to DHS's latest guidance for institutions. It's done two or three memos over the last couple of weeks, and that's been actually very helpful, I think, for international educators understanding what's going on. NAFS has also been involved and sent some further recommendations as it'll impact current international students, those applying for OPT and other benefits of status. But the ones that we're talking about now regarding online courses and that type of thing where students can do those from. So DHS has posted three or four scenarios in this memo. Three scenarios. First one, a school completely closes and does not have online courses or other alternate learning procedures. So if you're in the minority of institutions that do not have an online presence or offer an online version of your courses for students in this situation with COVID, the response should be, if a school closes temporarily without online instruction or other alternative learning procedures, a student should remain active in SEVIS so long as they, as a student, intend to resume their course of study when classes resume. This is similar to short-term breaks in the school calendar when classes are not in session. But they must. The important thing is schools must notify SEVP of COVID-19 procedural changes within 10 business days. So that's the key caveat there, two weeks. Second scenario, a school temporarily stops in-person classes but implements online or other alternate learning procedures, and the non-immigrant student remains in the United States. And response there is, if school closes temporarily but offers online instruction, the non-immigrant student should participate in online or other alternative learning procedures and remain in active status. Schools must notify COVID-19 of the SEVP of these changes within 10 business days, same procedure there. And given the extraordinary nature of the COVID-19 emergency, SEVP will allow F1 and M1 students to temporarily count online classes towards full course of study in excess of the limits previously stated, which limited it to basically one course per term. So that's good news. And scenario three, the schools shut down, do go all online, but the student chooses to return home to their home country. Similar procedure, as long as the institution notifies SEVP within 10 business days that the student is back home, but is participating in online enrollment, online courses, it will be as if they have, they will be able to allow them to return given the nature of the emergency here. But it only for in effect for the duration of the emergency and in accordance with the procedures involved. So as long as the school is all online, the student can remain back home in their home country, but then must return for the next term for full on-campus study. So that's good news that SEVP has acted and has gotten some information out that really helps, hopefully makes clear to institutions and to students what the actual policies and procedures are that are going to impact them most directly. So that has a lot to do with just the status pieces of our current international students. And that's obviously important. They're the ones that are with you now that certainly need the care, need the instruction, need the advice on what to do. You may still be struggling with some of those pieces yourself, but in reality, what you tell them is what's going to inform their decisions if and when they do go home, how they communicate back home. So your response matters, and the timeliness of it, the appropriateness of it, the level-headedness of it, hopefully, provides the students with a kind of sense of calm and authority that they need at a time when everything seems to be going quite bonkers. So that deals with just the structural pieces. We'll talk a little bit later about caring for those students on a more personal level and what they're going through, and whether we're missing the mark as institutions, and we'll talk through that a little bit more. But the larger issue and probably more pressing issue for those that may be just on the admissions side is getting your class in. What are you going to be doing to help your incoming students navigate what might have been chance opportunities for you to connect with them through spring travel that have now gone by the wayside because all your spring travel has been canceled. No one's really traveling at all right now, international recruitment wise. So how is that impacting your processes moving forward? You look at admitted student events you're going to be doing. For some that are maybe more rolling admissions or have ongoing deadlines for international students for the admissions piece, there may have been students that were just in the application process to you that were looking to take exams, and that's the next big piece we're looking at here. We're talking about exams that have been canceled, flat up canceled around the world. And we're talking everything from TOEFL and IELTS to SAT, ACT, GRE, GMAT. So all of these major exams that are the lifeblood of international admissions for institutions in the U.S. and abroad. We also see just this past week, we had the two major, actually at least two major organizations from Cambridge in England. We've got A levels and GCSE exams being canceled. We've got also IB Worldwide has canceled their IB exams for May and June. So these are massive events that are landmarks for students that are applying to universities. The results of these exams, particularly in the UK or British universities that depend heavily on these final A-level scores to admit students for university study there, and also impacting how US universities, what are we going to do now? Are we going to go on predicted marks? And most students that are applying with A-levels for the fall admission, they won't have those A-level final results before they're admitted. In the UK, it's a different story. That those once those A-levels come out, that's when increasingly students are waiting to apply to universities, and it's a much quicker process in the UK than it is in the US, even for international students. That you see these cancellations of A-levels and GCSEs causing an almighty scramble, as this Times Higher Ed article reflects. For students that are and universities that are going to be looking for students for the fall. So how are you guys going to be responding to that? Are you if a student who you may have already admitted conditional admitted based on their predicted A level results or their predicted IB results that they're not going to have these exam results for before they enter in the fall. What are you going to do as an institution? Are you going to waive those? Because for many US institutions, it's not perhaps as important because if the exams aren't available, they aren't available for the admission decision. And they clearly, for most universities in the US, they aren't before the student would enroll, other than maybe getting the results a couple, 3 weeks before they would be starting classes and they would bring the results of those to campus. And those may not. And for top, maybe more of the more selective schools that don't give advanced standing credit for IB and A levels, there may be maybe issues there with not being able to award credit that maybe some students were banking on having if they were to get full diploma status and a higher point score into the upper 30s and low 40s. So what does that, how does that impact what you do? It may not impact the admission decision, but may impact transfer credit that student's going to be able to get. Those exams, at some point, you would think would be held. They've been postponed, canceled. The wording is kind of irrelevant right now. But students, ideally, at some point, will want to take that exam that they've worked so hard for. But how that can happen before a new school year begins, when they might be starting university in a different country. A lot of logistical questions that I'm sure you're struggling with on your own campuses and how to respond to that. And I'd love to hear from anybody who's been who's already started thinking down these lines in terms of what that will do for your institutions. And I know really institutions that have are experiencing this and maybe saw the writing on the wall when some of the SAT and ACT results and IELTS and TOEFL results or tests were being canceled. A lot of you were probably thinking, okay, well, this incoming class, if we haven't already made decisions and we're these students that we are in our pipeline now for the fall aren't going to have opportunities to take these tests, you have one of two options. You can go test optional and say, okay, we'll go based on your academic records we have to date and recommend and essays and recommendations or anything else like that. And we'll waive TOEFL or not waive TOEFL or IELTS, waive SAT or ACT. And if you haven't already taken an IELTS or TOEFL exam, what you potentially could do is I know a number of schools are looking at Duolingo and some have already moved that way. We talked about Mizzou a couple of weeks ago, and we've also seen Whitman University. In Whitworth University, excuse me, in Washington State, that has also recently fast-tracked acceptance of Duolingo as an alternative to TOEFL or IELTS for English language proficiency, your flexibility will make a difference to those students. If you're willing to become test optional, and increasingly we've seen more and more universities each week have been becoming test optional anyway, but even more so in light of the cancellation of SAT, ACT, and other standardized tests that impact admissions decisions. So that's this kind of what COVID-19 ironically has forced a lot of institutions to do is look at their overall enrollment process and admissions criteria, and realize perhaps something I've been espousing for a number of years is that, frankly, U.S. admissions is too complicated. And there is too many details, it takes too long, and really we overthink the process in the U.S., particularly when it comes to international students in terms of admissions criteria for them and the hoops that they have to jump through, particularly relative to other countries that are increasingly our competitors, is required to apply and be admitted to other institutions in other countries. We set the bar way too high, higher to the point where when in an increasingly competitive market that we find ourselves in globally as U.S. institutions, we see our competitors ratcheting up their marketing, ratcheting up the ease and the process through which international students can enter their campuses. And I think that's really not responding and not becoming more flexible is hurting U.S. Institutions above and beyond everything else going on politically that we all know impacts impressions individuals, students, and parents have about the United States, how we as institutions, because we're all so different and we all do different deadlines and different policies and procedures, different test scores, different GPA requirements, all of that's such a mess. We need to simplify our admissions processes. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of what we have direct control over as institutions, maybe not your office specifically have direct control over it, but you can make the case up the chain why this is necessary in the global market that we live in. And the reluctance to do so, we're seeing institutions move on test optional for SAT, ACT that might not have done ordinarily for COVID-19. Hopefully, if there's sense and some proof in the pudding in terms of enrollments this fall because of that waiver, then institutions that have shown their flexibility in this very trying period for international education and international students that are looking to go outside their home countries, the more open we can be and the more flexible we can be as institutions in this time is only going to help our overall impression of folks out in the wide world that might be looking at the United States as an option. If we can show we can adapt our processes to help students and parents in their time of need, certainly we have a time of need where, as institutions, we're going to be hurt and we're probably going to see fall-offs this fall because of students that just aren't able to get here. And the one thing we haven't talked about yet that is the elephant in the room is that you could still make all your processes as more streamlined and more flexible and more test optional as you can, but unless the U.S. State Department, which this past week closed all non-immigrant visa services at all embassies and consulates worldwide, unless that gets reversed before the 120-day out rule, which is when students can first apply for visas, for the coming fall term. That's 120 days in advance of the program start date. That's the earliest a student can apply for a student visa appointment. Unless that doors get opened in time, and we're talking May, middle of May for most campuses, unless that process gets restarted, and then you consider a backlog of perhaps 6 weeks to 2 months of appointments that haven't been able to take place at U.S. consulates and embassies in terms of non-immigrant visa services, officers that will have to do doing the interviews, are they going to be able to bring more people on when you're trying to practice social distancing? Is that even going to be possible at consulates and embassies to catch up in time to get through the backlog for fall entry? And I think the reality many of you that are forward-thinking individuals are looking at is really what are we going to do is that this fall might be too early to really see any dramatic impact to what it, with all the steps that we might be looking to take. So I know a lot of institutions are looking now at deferrals, and if not deferrals for entry into the university, deferrals for entry into the United States, because realistically, the chances of being able to get all the ducks in a row to be able to clear a backlog at embassies and consulates for the students to be able to go and get their visas. If they're Chinese students, they're and going into STEM, they're already looking at administrative processing that might take 3 to 6 months. So they'd almost already be looking at January entry at the earliest. So we are talking about institutions that are looking at alternatives for that first semester of study. Now, the really proactive ones are already working with, if they haven't already, developed a first year or first semester option for new students that are in the pipeline now for admissions, where they could be admitted for fall, start with all online classes in the fall, and then do the I-20 at some point in the fall for them to come and have time to go for their visas and get all their ducks in a row for on-campus studies starting in January. Not the ideal situation, but that's a reality that forward-thinking institutions certainly need to be looking at right now. And I wonder how many are looking that way, because really that's something that's can if done right, can show your institution in a very, very positive light that can put you in a position that you'd be certainly on the vanguard if you're able to get it and pull it off. Where you would have resources in place for those students for the fall term that you're developing now, perhaps, in terms of your communication with your students during this period where they're all online and figuring that out. So, if you can figure out something that's a normal first year curriculum for the different programs that they can enroll in online in that first semester in the fall, and then you bring them to campus in the spring for on campus for the first on campus semester, that's a great advantage, I would think. If you can pull it off, there's a lot of moving parts there, I realize. But a couple resources I want to direct you to. One I've just posted the link to in the comments section is if you're familiar with INTED, they're out of Boston. They're a great organization. Ben Waxman is the head of INTED. They put together kind of a an immer kind of a town hall meeting last week. That had on the 19th, last Thursday, I guess it was, with some leading professionals in the field, including my friend Jessica Sandberg at Duke Kunshan. She's a dean of enrollment at Duke Kunshan in China, Duke's campus there. They were closed early on in February, and then she came back to the Duke campus, home campus in North Carolina, and then she had to go through a closure again when Duke shut down, went all online. So. She was on the panel along with Angel Ahmed, another friend who she has her own consulting business as well. She is CEO of GNET. She used to be at Full Sail University in Florida and a good friend who's doing some incredible things and has a great network of folks she's working with around the globe to help international students find their the right fit for them. It's also Ashish Fernando, CEO of iSchool Connect, and he talked through some of the online tools that students that universities should be using to get their online tools for their current students in place, as how assessments can be done. So there's some really great insight there, and they put together a resource document that I've just shared the link to. I do want to close though with one comment or one article that was written by an international enrollment director. At University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. She's Chinese, originally from China, but she has expressed her concern that in an article she wrote for Inside Higher Ed, that U.S. institutions are falling short in terms of meeting their responsibilities for their current international students. And she makes some important points in her article, and talking about some of the things we referenced earlier about becoming more text flexible, po having more, developing more flexible policies for testing, looking at other options, including Duolingo and online interviews by faculty members and other services, While universities are doing what they can on the admissions side, we look at what they're trying to do for their current students. She makes the very valid point that that the level of attention that's been paid to international students throughout the crisis, current international students on our campuses, has really been, I think, a bit lacking. And she makes reference to the cases that have been reported on nationwide of Asian students, whether from China or Asian American students, that are being targeted and blamed for this pandemic. Obviously, ignorance runs rampant, even in college campuses, and maybe even especially on college campuses. But it's less, it's even more unforgivable there when they should know, students obviously should know better. And some of that may be politically motivated, of course. When the president calls it the Chinese virus, lowly educated members of his base, they take those signs from him and, oh, well, it's their fault and we're going to blame China for this and anyone that might look Chinese. Yeah, even and just the ignorance involved is just shocking at the highest level. But that's nothing new when it comes to the current president of the United States. But what is really encouraging, I think, and she makes and does point out that she's glad that SEVP has become more flexible for students, and that actually came fairly quickly. The guidance from SEVP after campuses started to shut down and go remote or go all online, interpreting those regulations is always a challenging for the most highly gifted international student advisor. But there's other things in terms of mental health issues for current students, the ability to go home or not go home, the fracas that we talked about a couple weeks ago with Harvard and other colleges kicking students off campus, and the reality of what that meant, kicking people off campus, I think was a little overblown in the media, but certainly the optics were bad, and there's no doubting that statement. That for institutions that decided to kick students off campus or force students to move out of the residence halls, the policies all were, well, exceptions can be made if they apply, if international students or low-income students can apply for exceptions to be able to stay on campus because they can't get home and they shouldn't be just kicked out in the cold. So how that all this has been handled hasn't been ideal. But certainly there's a lot of things have been moving so fast and a lot of institutions were caught off guard. It's important, though, that we keep in mind why we're here. We're all here to care for our students, and whether they're our current internationals that are far away from home or unable to get home, or our study abroad students that we're trying to bring home that can't get home in a timely fashion. They have to be at the heart of what we do. And caring for them is what really determines our success in the future, is how well we treat our students today, both current and future. So obviously a lot of food for thought, and a lot of things have been moving so fast, it's hard to catch your breath sometime when we realize what's going on in the world. But it's I do find comfort knowing that there are professionals out there and institutions that have a heart for international students that are realizing it's time to step up and it's time to take a lead on some of these things and really show that put our time and our money as staff, as institutions, with where our hearts are. And that's something that I think is important. So for those of you who've been regular listeners on the roundup on the podcast or watching live here on Facebook or on replay on YouTube or here on the Facebook page, I just can't thank you enough for sticking with us in this very difficult time for all international education, but for all, the whole world. It's hardly a corner of this world that isn't impacted by this pandemic. So stay safe, distance-wise and health-wise, and we look forward to connecting with you in the weeks and months to come. Cheers.